but you can be better prepared. So talk to your healthcare provider or call 1-888-ASK-HRSA. This message is a public service of WUSB and Emergency Medical Services for Children.
Did you know that back in 1964, before we became a disposable society, 87% of the soda and beer sold in the United States was packaged in reusable, refillable bottles? By 1994, this number had dwindled to only 6%. And studies show that reusing glass containers saves 90% of the energy required to make new ones. Recycling glass is good, but reusing glass bottles is even better. So remember, using it once is not enough. Choose to reuse.
Yes, indeed. And you are listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock time once again for another edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, you are joined by Kyle.
I am. I am honored to be as well.
Oh, and the feeling's mutual.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. And I'm sure all of our listeners out there feel the same way, and we feel that way about them. And now we've gotten all the social niceties out of the way, we can dive into it.
Yeah, a lot of pleasantries. Well, I'm just so appreciative of how civil things are here.
Civil.
Yeah, there's a lot of civility in the room.
Civility is the theme, after all.
Yes.
And hopefully, by being civil, we can get through your thick skull. No, it's hard. It's hard to wean ourselves off the combativeness of, you know, different sides giving different opinions. But that's what democracy is all about. You know, we all have the right to say what is on our mind. I think the only real enemy is indifference, people who don't care. And, you know, if a week from tonight you don't care enough to go out and cast your vote, yeah, I think you're the problem. I think that's the real problem. The people I disagree with, you know, I disagree with, but at least they're exercising their rights, their opinions. They're, you know, hopefully thinking for themselves. And if that's the case, bravo. But I will work to defeat you. I will work to get my side out there. But dialogue, conversation, debate, that's important. And we went to a debate last night.
Oh, did we?
Oh, that was fun. That was fun. Our local congressional race, we're in congressional district number one. Yeah, we're number one here in New York. I guess because we're in the southeast and pretty much France is next if you keep going. So
okay,
that makes us number one. And I guess the people in Buffalo must be like number 250 or so. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure how it works.
We don't need to get caught up in that.
No anyway. Need to get technical. Watch C-SPAN for that. But we went to a debate at the Hampton Bays High School.
Yeah, was that a school?
I've never been inside the Hampton Bays High School. Well, why would I be inside the Hampton Bays High School? There's no reason. But it was cool. You know, we went there, and it was a debate between our congressman, our current congressman, Lee Zeldin, and our potential future congressman, Perry Gershon. Of course, each side does not see it quite that way. But it was a rousing debate, and in fact, the second of three debates that are taking place between those candidates. Finally, you know, we've been pushing for this for a long time, mostly addressing Congressman Lee Zeldin, saying, come on, show up for a debate, you know, face off against this guy. And last night I kind of understood why he was hesitating, why he didn't want to do that, because, I don't want to appear too biased. I am biased, there's no question about it, but I don't want to appear as if I'm not considering all sides. But, man, I think Perry Gershon wiped the floor with Lee Zeldin last night. I just do. You can see the debate yourself. It's online on YouTube. Just look for Hampton Bays debate, Zeldin, Gershon, and you can see for yourself. But it was just a cool thing to participate in. Not that we were part of the conversation, but we were there in the audience seeing these guys square off against each other, answering questions from representatives of the League of Women Voters. It was really cool to be a part of that.
Yeah, the audience also was able to write questions, and students would pick those up, and they would be considered by the panel during the debate. And then towards the end, they had audience questions, and they eliminated duplicates and did all that. It was really kind of a cool process, and you were totally allowed to participate and contribute to the questions that were posed to each candidate.
Now, if you happen to be in the district and you're currently kicking yourself because you didn't go last night and you missed an amazing display of democracy, guess what? You can do it today. There is another debate happening. It's starting in just about 50 minutes or so. And if you hightail it on that, well, don't drive unsafely. Just get over to the Sachem Public Library. The debate starts at 7 p.m. And that's hosted by the Brookhaven League of Women Voters. So that's pretty awesome that there's yet another one. And hopefully more issues will be brought up then. And I'm sure it'll be available online as well, but this is what we need to see. We need to see more such interactions, conversations. And, you know, that was my biggest complaint throughout this whole campaign, is that there wasn't the dialogue. There was simply, you know, statements and, you know, not showing up for town hall, not having town halls. If you're an elected representative, I think you have an obligation to talk to the people both you agree with and that you disagree with. I think that's true of any politician. And if you don't do that, it's not the job for you.
Yeah, constituents expect you to answer to them. Mm-hmm. And you don't necessarily get to keep your spot indefinitely just because you've claimed it and won in the past. This is a cycle, and when it comes down to a ballot election like this, you really have to answer and campaign and earn that vote again.
Absolutely. So we're going to talk more about this a little later in the show, but there are some other things to attend to first. First of all, this is a fundraising edition of the program, but we don't have anybody in the tally room, so we won't be giving out the phone number to call because nobody will answer since we're both talking on the air. But what you can do is go to WUSB.FM and just basically pledge there. And feel free to lean on the zero a little bit and pledge generous amounts and keep this amazing radio station on the air and broadcasting all kinds of topics that you can be a part of as well. In fact, we'll open the phone lines later. I know, you know, Suffolk County, people are kind of apathetic about anything. But maybe we'll get some people to call up a little later on. It'd be kind of nice to, you know, to talk to people, especially people who disagree. Love talking to people we disagree with. The phone number for future reference, 631-632-WUSB, and we'll open up a little bit later on. Wow, what a week. You know, I can't even begin to wrap it all up, so it's going to be a bit awkward. But this was a painful week in our history. No less than 3 terrorist attacks in our country, all at the hands of angry white men. And that's probably why it's not being referred to as terrorism. But you know, you really would be hard-pressed to persuade me that these are not terrorist acts when you have African-Americans who were targeted because they were African-Americans in a grocery store in Kentucky. Literally, the shooter said, white people don't kill white people, to the people in the store, and then proceeded to kill black people. That is what happened. You had the bombings. Now, thank God the bombs didn't go off, but they were bombs, and there's no question about that. Despite what you might be seeing, and it's gotten all the way into the mainstream media that these are false flags, that this didn't really happen. Of course, it happened. I mean, you think all of law enforcement and the media are all, you know, having a secret meeting someplace and saying, yeah, you know what, let's come up with this story a couple of weeks before Election Day, and that ought to, you know, persuade people to do a certain political direction in the country. No, this happened. This is real. They caught the guy. Fortunately, they caught the guy, but he targeted critics of Donald Trump, and that is a form of terrorism when you make people afraid to express their opinions, to criticize, to do what they're supposed to be doing in the first place, either running a political campaign or being a part of the media, asking questions, criticizing. That is what a democratic system is all about. And to terrorize people into holding back on that or not participating, yeah, you can't get any more terroristic than that. And then, of course, the most tragic of all, just simply because of the numbers, the 11 people massacred in the synagogue in Pittsburgh on Saturday. The guy there shouting "All Jews must die" as the actions unfolded
with an assault rifle and multiple handguns.
I haven't even gotten into the gun part of this yet.
Yeah.
I'm still reeling from the terrorist aspect of it and you know the violence in our country that is something that we thought we somehow were immune to or immune from. And we're not. We're not at all. There is a lot of positivity that has come out of this, as much as can come out of tragic situations like this. And I think leading that is the community that we have seen. You know, almost right away, you saw condemnations from Muslim Americans, from Black Lives Matter, from every single religious group or social group you could imagine, just unconditional signs of support. And that was a beautiful thing to see. That tells me that is who we really are, you know, not the people that consider the other side enemies or that there even is another side. There's so much diversity, so much beauty in this country, and sometimes it takes a tragedy to open eyes to that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true, but there's not a lot of MAGA hats, I think, coming out expressing their condolences. Perhaps there are, but
not today in Pittsburgh, that's for sure.
The families were adamant they did not want the president to visit, and they were explicitly requesting basically not to have his entourage come there. And many of the political leadership was also disinterested in joining the president for his brief visit there.
Yeah,
Under the circumstances, and of course, you know, respecting the family's wishes, and you know, to see the Jewish community and the Muslim community come together, you would think there would be more of the Republican side out there expressing and condemning that aspect of their community. But yeah. Instead, it's quiet, and you have the president being forced to be a president, and there's nothing else. I'm sure that's an exaggeration, but
I don't think there was a single elected official joining Trump today. The mayor of Pittsburgh said, "Please don't come." As you mentioned, families were saying this as well. There, when we came into the studio, we were hearing reports that there are thousands of people demonstrating in the street. And when you think about that, you know, there's this really somber occasion, real tragedy. Everybody is feeling it. And this passion that this is not the person who should be here now, that speaks volumes. That speaks incredible volumes. And do you really think he's going to be able to keep his mouth shut about that?
No, he's going to go in on the media for sure.
He's going to attack the media.
All the coverage.
He's going to attack the mayor. He's going to attack Democrats. He'll attack everybody who says anything, and that is what has brought us here. Because when you consider all these terrorist acts that took place in the last week, every single one of them, the guy sending out the bombs and his van covered with stickers, with people in crosshairs. And I'm sorry, if you're driving a van that has pictures of real people in crosshairs, I think you're a threat. I think you're either going to inspire somebody to do something violent, or you're going to do something violent yourself. And if you see somebody driving around in a vehicle that is actually targeting people in crosshairs, I think you should report them as a threat to society, because that is not healthy. That's not expressing your opinion. That's issuing a threat. And to have this guy be driving around for so long, with something like that, is disturbing. And I know there are more people like that as well, and they are inspired by the rhetoric of the commander-in-chief. That is disgusting. And not only him, but the racial attack in Kentucky, absolutely, white people under threat. This myth that has been growing in this country over the past few years. And finally, the attack in the synagogue. What's interesting about that is how the right wing is spinning it in this country. They're saying that the guy. In fact, we heard Lee Zeldin say this last night, didn't we? That he's not a fan of Trump.
That was the attempt, I believe. Yeah, is that he was upset that Trump was not going far enough.
Mm-hmm.
And dismissed the bad optics, or his idea of that as being an excuse to not do more things that would, I guess, I don't know, impact the control, this alleged control that Jews have over everything, or whatever his mania had convinced him.
Mm-hmm.
And went in. That was the phrase, I guess, on social media. Well, but
yeah, I guess what he was saying was that Trump isn't Trump enough, which is kind of a strange thing to say. But when you consider what it is that that this jerk stood for, I'd like to use stronger words, but I can't.
Yeah.
Basically, he was seeing particular races as threats, and seeing Jews as threats. Here's the thing. He was particularly upset that the Jewish community was welcoming migrants, helping migrants to come to this country. That is part of what I was talking about before, the beauty of community and togetherness, and to see one group helping out another group, to see a Jewish group help out Central American migrants trying to get to this country, to see Muslims standing up for a Jewish synagogue after the massacre. You know, it goes on and on and on, where all these groups are supporting each other and basically standing up for each other. That is the true America that I see. And what this guy was after was basically reclaiming the country, you know, white people under attack. And these are the things that Trump does stand for. He may not attack the Jewish people, but he does in a more subtle way. You know, I many people say that Trump is not anti-Semitic, and he probably isn't anti-Semitic. But his policies, the people he surrounds himself with, the people he appeals to, the people who are inspired by him, none of that is positive. None of that is a good thing for the Jewish people or for really any people.
Yeah, his message has been a vehicle for that part of his base to run with. And you get actions like this, thinking that somehow this is the right time. It's never the right time to act in that way to other people, you know, and have symbols on your vehicle that, you know, you would associate with hunters or, military insignia and that kind of stuff. To treat politicians that way, I think, is a little bit off.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been a rough week, you know, seeing all this happen. You know, and this all happened in less than a week. I think it started, last Wednesday?
Yeah, that's when they announced it. But the first packages were found on Monday, actually. So that had been, the investigation had already been underway for like 48 hours, and they announced it on Wednesday.
Is that true? I didn't hear that anywhere else.
Yeah.
I thought they only started to arrive last, okay.
No, the authorities were tipped off and already aware that one or two of them was in circulation or had been sent. They were onto it by Monday, I think, but had not gone public till Wednesday.
Okay. Well, CNN didn't know about it till Wednesday.
No, of course, but they started showing up.
Uh-huh.
But I think the FBI was already aware, and it was just a lot wider after a lot of them had started showing up.
Well, okay, obviously,
were in the system.
Obviously, they were mailed earlier, but it just makes you wonder, what else is out there? What else is being planned? What else is being, you know, plotted and schemed and inspired by hateful rhetoric? And, you know, the real irony about all this is how Republicans have been spinning this as if, you know, the left is somehow the violent ones. The left are the mobs of people. When in actuality, they are simply expressing themselves. They are simply, you know, right now in Pittsburgh, I suppose they'd call that a mob. People demonstrating against Trump's presence. But that is simply a display of people expressing an opinion in every manner that they are allowed to do.
And he went to a community that he was not welcome in. Mm-hmm. And if they choose to boo him out of town, that is absolutely their right.
Mm-hmm.
He was not invited, and he went to get whatever out of it he could for himself to maybe spin as a human or an actual president. But it, by all means, is their right. And I was surprised that the protests there were not larger. But, you know, good on Pittsburgh for tolerating that and expressing how they feel. But the other thing that gets me, and we mentioned this, is that the Republicans are in power. So this mm-hmm. side is using these tactics, I think, because they're on their heels. Maybe that's optimistic. Or just me seeing what I want to see or my bias. But I absolutely I feel like this is some ignorant handling of these issues by the Republicans, by these crazed people. They've got the permission. And as I said years and years ago, this is the kind of stuff that this administration validates. I've said that. I've mm-hmm. said that years ago. In the run up to this, here we are. This is what happens, and look how ignorant it is. This is how you deal with people that you disagree with. This is not the way our system works. It's a system. That's the other thing I've been kind of meaning to say, and I would remind people: politics is a system. Use it. Participate in the system. It's all it is. It's a simple system. It's a little complex at the same time, but it is a system that we have here in this country, and to ignore it or to feel as though you can't affect it in any way is, I think, a height of despair and and disillusionment that is actually not real. So, but it's just amazing to see a party in power and individuals associated with it acting in this ignorant way when they have power to shape the agenda and do things to better our country and do the unifying that needs to happen. And they're not. They're not. They're not doing their jobs. They're doing the bidding of what lobbyists want to do. They're doing the bidding of what the family of Trump wants and their business interests and so on and so forth. The highest bidder, all of that. And I just think it's so sad that is how they're going to deal with things they don't like or agree with. And ironically, when they're in power.
Yeah. And if the message that you're receiving from those people is something that encourages you to fear or hate any particular group of people, it's the wrong message. I don't care what side you're on. But if the message being sent is that these people are the enemy and they are coming to do I'm not talking about political differences. Obviously, you know, there's competition between candidates. But I'm talking about, you know, if Muslims or Central American refugees or people who live in a particular place or come from a particular lifestyle, if they are portrayed as enemies or threats, whether it's, you know, somehow causing more crime, somehow taking your job, somehow accosting your child in a bathroom, there are all kinds of dog whistles out there that are designed to raise your hackles and get you to fear and to hate and to act out. Some people go a lot further than other people. But if that is how the message is being sent to you, consider why it's being sent to you that way. You know, people are inspired by hatred and by fear. And if you look at any dark period in history, that is always what's behind it, whether it's against Jews, whether it's against Roma, whether it's against gays and lesbians, whether it's against African Americans. That has always been the way that people are inspired to act against their own interests. And it is against their own interests. When you act against other people, you are acting against yourself. It may take you a while to realize that, but it is always the case. So please, please keep an eye out for that kind of signaling and call it out. Call it out whenever something like that happens. You know, getting back to the local race here, there's a real controversy going on. We've talked about how we've noticed vandalism. That seems to be pretty one-sided, where the Democratic candidate signs are knocked down or simply removed while the other candidate is not. It got even worse over the last week. It's really, you know, I'd like to think we're above this kind of thing, but obviously there are people who are not. So Perry Gershon, the Democratic candidate for Congress in the 1st District, which we are in right now, and the Stony Brook campus also is within that, believes his pro-choice positions are one of the things leading to the defacing of about 50 campaign signs, and that's in the Patchogue area. And the Patchogue area is a pretty heavy Lee Zeldin area, the current congressman. In fact, that's where his office is. Now, Gershon says the signs were removed, defaced, and then reposted. He said he hasn't filed a police report, but Suffolk police are aware of the situation. And it's a potential hate crime. Why? Well, the stencil, we looked at pictures of the signs, and what somebody did was and they could have done this on the site. I suppose they could have removed the signs and then put them back. But I think this kind of a thing they could do in about, I don't know, what do you say, 5 seconds?
Yeah, ask Banksy how it's done.
Yeah, well, hopefully Banksy doesn't do this kind of thing.
Yeah, but he gets in and out. I mean, that's any street artist will tell you that.
But yeah, what they did here was simply spray paint the words baby killer and gay lover on the campaign sign. Something ridiculously juvenile, stupid, hateful. In fact, Gershon says this is just pure hate. There's no reason for it in any campaign. I have no idea who's behind it. I can guess who they support based on the fact that they stole my signs. Lee Zeldin says no matter who it is, they need to knock it off. It's not helpful. It doesn't help either campaign you're trying to help. I mean, I would expect any candidate to denounce this sort of thing, but it is pretty obvious that the people behind this are not in favor of Perry Gershon winning the race. The two candidates agree the situation is indicative of the political climate right now, not just in the congressional district or on Long Island, but across the country. And, you know, until some kind of resolution is reached, LGBT Network President David Kilmeade says these signs only reinforce the concerns that many in the community have right now. Seeing these signs in our own hometown right here on Long Island just elevates that fear even more. Suffolk police say the department has agreed to enhance patrols at the LGBT's community center in Bayshore. Look at the effect of this. That's not the political campaign. Those are people, simply people going about their lives who now have to live in fear because of this kind of crap. So, yeah, it has effects. It has consequences. And this kind of thing has absolutely no place anywhere in any of these dialogues, but it's there. It exists. And we all need to call it out. We all need to see when it happens, and we all need to see the things that lead up to it happening. This is just one more in a string of really ugly things happening both here and throughout the nation. And hopefully we move in the next couple of weeks to something a bit more mature, you know, more accepting. I don't know. It's hard to be optimistic sometimes.
Yeah, but I also am, I think, heartened. I think anybody out there who is having a difficult time with the politics in the country, get involved. Do something. I really implore everyone. It's a great way to have a stake in what's going on in your community, whatever kind of campaign or community event or organization that you can help out. I guarantee they need your help. They want you to come and help. And it's really a good feeling. You will feel better when you interact with people and work on something, whatever you believe in. I honestly, it's just about participating, and you can do more than just cast your ballot, but at the minimum, vote. Just vote in the races and on the issues, and you know, educate yourself as much as possible. But by getting out there and sharing in the process and going to some of these town halls and stuff, you realize it's accessible. It's something that you can really have an instrumental role in, and it's unusual. It is so common for people to go about their business, mm-hmm. go look at leaves or whatever they do on Long Island, you know, surfing or I don't know what people fishing and I don't want to get caught up in Long Island, but anyway, participate because everyone else is out just working and living their lives and expecting other people to carry that. And you know, mm-hmm. if you're free and you're a student or maybe you have a 4-day work week and you can spare it a day during the week, get out there. There are people that need you. There are people in your community that could use your help, and it is a real morale booster for anyone who's you know, feeling a bit down.
It doesn't even have to be a full day. It can be a couple of hours. It can just be a conversation. You know, what we were amazed by yesterday going to this debate was how accessible everything was. You can just go to this particular place and watch your government, watch the democratic process unfold in front of you. See, now you mentioned town halls. Yeah, if only, Kyle, if only Lee Zeldin had town halls over the last, what, year and a half? Not one. And that's part of the problem when you don't talk to the people that have questions for you, when you only talk to the people you agree with. That's always been a thing of mine. You know, it's easy to preach to the choir, to surround yourself in your little bubble with people that see it your way. But it's not doing you any good. It makes things like 2016 happen where you think there's all these people that are around, but there are more people that are around that you don't know about. You need to talk to them, too. You need to hear what they have to say. Maybe they're out of their minds. Maybe they're not. But you'll never be able to assess a situation if you simply cut yourself off from the dialogue. That, unfortunately, is what's happened over the last couple of years in this district, and hopefully things will change one way or another. This was a good step. This was a very good step. Now, if you want to be involved, it's easy to be involved. Obviously, voting is the best way to be involved, showing up next week. And casting your ballot doesn't take long, doesn't hurt. But tonight, in about 25 minutes, another debate taking place. First Congressional District, Perry Gershon and Lee Zeldin facing off at the Sachem Public Library in right here on Long Island. So I'm not going to give directions to it because I don't really know how to get there. But and we're not going to make it there because we're on the air. But you can if you're driving around. Maybe you're coming back from work. Maybe you're on the LIE right now. Well, you know what? Why not get home a little bit later and go see a debate and watch the Democratic process? It's inspirational. It really is amazing.
Take some friends and, you know, help them get activated. And learn something, you know, learn something about the process and about your representatives.
Yeah.
That no-show, the town hall thing, I think that was a trend like the last 2 years. I can't exactly remember.
Oh, Peter King did the same thing in, what's that, the third district, another district on Long Island. And, you know, I've spoken out against Peter King many times, but I know he has not been meeting his constituents as well unless they're his friends. And that's not right.
Yeah, it started, I think, at the federal level and also at the state level. Basically, a lot of state senators U.S. senators for various states, when they'd visit, you know, they'd get shouted out and they'd have really angry people there for a lot of these things that got passed. I think the tax cuts, that was a huge one, and ACA. Destruction was also a really contentious time, and they started canceling and just not showing up, and the excuse became security
or having it over the phone, having a conference call,
right,
or something ridiculous like that where you don't actually see the people you're talking to and you don't actually interact with them in any way.
Yeah, and it's an excuse I think that is kind of played out this close to the election. You know, there are real questions that voters have about who's at the helm, who's really got their interests at heart and will fight and represent them. And I don't think is good enough to have a U.S. senator or representative cite some specious security concerns. There are concerns. Everybody, yeah, we all have concerns. Mm-hmm. Life's, the world's a dangerous place. But, it is incumbent upon them to listen and to answer to the body politic they are working for.
Yeah, I mean, if they won't meet with us because of security concerns, how are we supposed to go about our lives when we're concerned about security as well? And that's one of the things we want to talk to them about. You know,
yep.
We're just supposed to exist and assume that they're going to do the right thing and not have to answer for anything that they actually decide on. So it's a good thing when these things happen. They don't happen enough, but this is a good step. And I hope a lot of people show up in Sachem tonight and witness this. You have to behave yourself. Although there were some instances last night where the crowd just couldn't contain themselves. Anything you remember particularly?
Well, I was listening intently. I followed the rules, and I didn't.
We're good. We're very good.
I didn't want to get on Ms. Peacock's bad side.
She was the moderator.
Yeah, she was the moderator from the League of Women Voters, and I didn't. I refrained from clapping or making any comments. It was tempting, and there were some points where everyone, I think, just couldn't listen to any more of it. There were a couple specific instances of that, and mostly, I think, in response to some things Zeldin was trying to do. I think he ironically or he was hypocritically saying that this shooting in Squirrel Hill was done for political gain, or he was commenting on Perry Gershon politicizing it, but in the very same moment didn't quite realize that his mentioning it was politicizing it, and he was doing it at a debate with Perry.
Well, he was trying to shame Perry for basically bringing up the issue of guns,
yeah,
as a problem, and Perry was very upfront about that, saying, "Yeah, I'm politicizing because this is exactly what we should be talking about." When people tell you not to politicize something, they never want to politicize it. They never want to discuss it. This is the time to talk about the problem that we have with easy accessibility to guns. And I think what Lee was trying to do was shame him, and the crowd just reacted very strongly against that. And there was a sustained period of booing,
yeah,
which was definitely against the rules.
Yeah, he basically was winding up with a pull-at-your-heartstrings kind of calling out and shaming. He started to say they're not even in the ground, and everyone completely shouted him down.
Right, right.
Said, no, no, no. You're not going to start talking about bodies in the ground and bury, you know, that kind of thing. It just, he did not realize the reaction, and it, I think, caught him off guard. And in a couple moments, they both you know, had their challenges. And again, it's about the content. It's about what they're actually saying, what they're doing. Yeah, I don't know. I think their true selves were shown.
The thing is, Lee Zeldin is a very polished politician. He's able to express himself, you know, very smoothly. And, you know, Perry Gershon, not so much. But when you listen to what he actually says, and, he makes this point that I am not a polished politician that, you know, gives you a good smooth show. I simply focus on the issues. I think once you establish those ground rules, people accept that, and you don't have to be somebody that fits a particular mold. That was, you know, an interesting contrast to see as the evening progressed. And, you know, you'd think after an outburst like that, you know, where the crowd's actually booing one of the candidates, that the situation would be tense. It wasn't. And if you feel like this is something that would keep you away, don't feel that way. It actually was quite pleasant. There were plenty of Lee Zeldin supporters in the crowd as well. And people were civil to each other. People got along. You know, people held doors for each other, all that kind of thing. It was a funny moment, too, at the beginning, because Ms. Peacock told us all that there'll be no applause and no cheering. Perry Gershon just jumped on stage to get a pen or something, and everybody started applauding him because it was the first time they had seen him. And then, you know, she said after that happened, all right, that's the last outburst there will be tonight. And even I said, that's not fair because Lee Zeldin's people didn't get to applaud him. And then a couple of seconds later, she said, okay, when Lee Zeldin shows up, you'll be able to applaud too. And of course, they applauded extra loudly when he showed up. It was levity. It was fun.
That was actually Perry, I think, offering 2 minutes or offering some time. Equally.
Did he do that?
I think that was a suggestion to her. Well, that's... And that's where she came up with the 2 minutes.
Yeah, we can be gracious to each other. Hey, let me give out the phone number if people want to call in during the conversation, express opinions. I especially reach out to Lee Zeldin supporters. Because clearly we're not, but we'd love to talk to them and have a nice conversation. And, you know, maybe we can get somewhere somehow, or, you know, maybe not. 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. That's our call in line. And if we are able to, we'll take your phone call. Here's something I saw on Facebook while just rummaging around. Sometimes you see something cool. And this is just what looks like a handwritten note. And basically it says, vote as if. Vote as if your skin is not white, as if your parents need medical care, as if your spouse is an immigrant, as if your son is transgender, as if your sister was a victim of gun violence, as if your best friend is a veteran living with PTSD, as if your brother is gay, as if your land is on fire, as if your house is flooded, as if your family depends on it. That is something. And like I said, I don't often go on Facebook, but that really... That really was something to read and to feel impact. And, you know, if you feel, well, wait a minute, what do you mean if your skin's not white? I feel alienated. Get a grip, okay? The country is basically built to give you every advantage in the world, and white people are not under threat.
Same if you're straight.
That's certainly true. Yeah, everybody faces hardships. Everybody faces difficulties. Everybody has challenges and injustices on a personal level. But to say the white race is under attack in this country is just absurdity of a level I don't even know how to address. But it's you know, this is one of the things that that winds up filling people with hatred and resentment and fear of the other. And that is how you have people talking about this this caravan in Central America. Well, I guess it's in North America now if it's in Mexico. That somehow is a threat to us, as if, have you looked at these people? They're women and children and people who have, you know, lost everything, simply trying to get to the border so they can apply for refugee status because their lives have fallen apart. They're fleeing violence. They're fleeing poverty. This is what our country was founded upon. And I'm hearing things every day. I'm hearing that Trump is sending troops to the border. that they're planning on giving them powers to act militarily in our own country. Horrible things like that, making these people somehow the enemy when these people I see as the hope. Because, you know, if you have a bunch of people who become citizens of your country who have escaped injustice, escaped poverty, escaped violence, these are people that will hold true to the ideals that you supposedly stand for and will defend those ideals against any threat. And maybe that's why Trump sees them as a threat, because he sure doesn't stand for that. It's just, it's disgusting to be on display in front of the entire world that way, where you have the situation. We should be honored that people feel the United States is a refuge against injustice. And we treat those people as if they're some kind of invading army. It's almost comical, but it's not, because there is real suffering going on here. And these people are mostly on foot. I mean, imagine that. When's the last time you walked on foot longer than 10 minutes? These people have been going for weeks, and they have weeks ahead of them, if not more.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's just it's not a very considerate attitude to lump people in with your agenda for border protection or whatever the cause is. And I think it's downright unchristian. So
well,
there.
Yeah, it's downright on every religion, I think.
Yeah, humanist.
Because if you look at religions, and this is another, you know, big issue where we fear other religions. You know, what we saw in this last week, we saw people bridging that gap on their own without certainly our leaders leading the way as they should. But people realizing that, you're in a synagogue, but you're just like me in a church or in a mosque. They didn't need any prompting. That is the natural feeling that we have. And I think, you know, a country like ours, where we supposedly embrace different religions, different backgrounds, different ethnicities and countries of origin, that comes a lot more natural. And this is where we have the advantage over, you know, countries. We've been to many of these countries where, you know, people hold grudges for centuries. And, you know, it's one of the good things is people tend to live in the same town for centuries, but also they basically see enemies as almost permanent. And that's unhealthy.
Yeah, and can't change any of those attitudes. So mm-hmm. We're a little different here. I think the more people learn, the more people communicate across communities and perceived boundaries, I think the empathy really comes out. And just like I said, you know, if you're feeling blue about politics, go out and talk to other voters, other citizens. It's the same idea. If you go and if you help people who are refugees, if you really stop looking at them as obviously or never to be associated with anything but whatever trafficking, you know, you feel passionate about that day, you know, that's not all the type of people they are. You can't just throw generalizations out. And I feel like if a lot of people actually went and met these individuals, these families at the border, they would realize that they're going to be used as a scapegoat now with the full force of the U.S. military.
Yeah, and you see, that's what you said really touches upon an important point, because that is always a good feeling that we get when we meet people that, you know, we're told we should be enemies with. We should not converse with this person because of their political background, their religion, the country they happen to live in. And when we actually do hang out with them, we see the common things before anything else, and we're able to experience those, you know, simple joys and share pleasant times before, you know, any hint of any kind of disagreement on anything is brought forward. And if and when those disagreements do come forward, I think they're put into perspective then, where you realize, okay, we disagree, but we still like each other. You know, when we went to the Deep South twice over the last couple of years, you know, we had a great time. We hung out with people, and we didn't really get into ideology and politics and things like that. I'm sure if we did, we would have had disagreements, but I don't think it would have come to blows. We realize that there are some truly good people on all sides, and you have to basically, you know, have that parameter set before you can move on to anything else. But if you simply, categorize them from the beginning as the enemy, evil, you never get to that point. You just see them as something that's a threat to you, and you act that way.
It's really lazy. I mean, it's really easy, I think, to be in your armchair and sit back and fault and vilify a group without actually being on the ground and trying to take it in I don't want some rancher to say, well, I see people on my ranch all that fine. You know, we've seen those news stories. That's not all people. And
that's not all ranchers either.
No, I'm sure there's some decent ranchers out
Absolutely,
there.
Absolutely, yes. I haven't hung out on a ranch enough, but
I've hung out on a couple ranches.
You know, you try and see their perspective, their concerns. They're not illegitimate concerns, but you know, they might be being fed some propaganda that could be pointing them in a particular direction. You know, I just hope if people, and that includes people on our side, if people question what they're told, regardless of where it comes from, and challenge it, and investigate, and reach their own conclusions, I think that's a clear recipe for not falling for anything that is below your intelligence level. And there's not enough of that these days. We tune to our particular network, and we listen to what they say. We don't listen to other sides. We don't investigate. We don't ask questions. And that is how you basically wind up with sides against each other that don't compromise in any particular way. This democratic process that we're talking about, where you actually show up and are a part of it, that is a major step towards defeating that, towards seeing past what you're told you must believe. It's hard. You have to put aside some time. You have to break your routine. But it's not as hard as you think it is. So, you know, go to debates, become part of a campaign, call in a radio talk show. Look at this. We don't have any calls because people are afraid to be a part of that dialogue. It's a hassle. It's an inconvenience. They are tired of the conversation. There's all kinds of reasons. But the danger is when you don't participate, somebody else basically participates for you.
That's a really good point, because the reasons for your plight then become lumped into whatever is convenient and whatever sells politically. And the politicians absolutely rely on their citizens and community members to speak to them and to really help them understand the causes and the pain in various communities and with various issues. And, you know, I disagree with a lot of different things, but this administration has worked on other things that I think there are issues that there are serious problems with. But when you take immigration reform and turn it into border wall, you're making an association, I think, that is too far afield. Great, you know, maybe that's true in some people's opinions, and maybe it's a cause in certain areas for specific problems. But across the board, it's the wrong direction. I don't think it's the way to fix it, and I think it's so important for people to really speak at what has caused and what has created the circumstances and really open up the issue, but not just take that sort of easy politically sellable excuse and just leave it at that, and then just throw all your anger at whomever is being vilified. It's just so ignorant. It's not an intelligent way to really work on a lot of the things in our society that need attention.
I just got notice from Finn. He's having a little bit of trouble landing his plane on the athletic fields. They're not giving clearance right now, so hopefully he'll get that done. He comes by light airplane every week. Did you know that?
Is it? Well, it's like a light biplane.
Yeah,
right?
But sometimes there's somebody playing a game on the athletic fields, and they don't get out of the way, and he has to circle around a few times before he's actually able to touch down. So we're waiting for that to happen, and so he might be a couple of minutes late.
He does. He has clearance.
So. Yeah, but that's good news for listeners. If anybody actually has a dialing finger that wants to call us, 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. Make us proud of the people in the First Congressional District here in Long Island, or anywhere in the world, you know, because we do talk to people throughout the internet. These are issues that are of great importance to everybody throughout the nation, if not the world.
Yeah, we want to hear from you. Tell us how you're participating, how you're not participating. If you're defacing signs, let us know.
Let us know that. Let us know where you are. Mm-hmm. we'll come by and watch and take some pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think they're showing us how they're not participating by not calling 631-632-9872. You know, it's interesting because while it may seem like nobody cares, we archive all of our shows. We have radio that basically goes back many years. And people are fascinated in the future when they look back on this and they see what we were talking about and how it played out afterwards. Anyway, we have a call. My guilt trip seemed to have worked a little bit. We have somebody on the radio. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Adam from Stony Brook.
Hi, Adam. How are you?
Pretty good. I wanted to just say something about Lee Zeldin's brand of politics. I've been listening to your conversation. And I agree that there are, you know, hotheads on both sides. But one of the things that's really going to draw me to the polls next week locally is that I feel like Lee Zeldin has taken with full embrace the Donald Trump kind of politic, whereas you don't see that with every single Republican. He really has gone all in, first with really embracing the whole conspiracy of the deep state, and he's been very vocal on Fox News and kind of a Devin Nunes approach to backing up everything the president says on that front. To more recently, he's given, you know, Perry Gershon that nickname, Park Avenue Perry, a very Donald Trump-esque kind of politics. And I'm really surprised, to be honest, because I don't think of Long Island as being that. I mean, we have a base here on the right and the left, but I'm surprised he's been that forthcoming about going all in for the Donald Trump pace. And I'll be curious to see if that works for him.
Well, I know he's definitely going all in for that. And also, as of yesterday, Donald Trump is pumping a whole lot of money into the Lee Zeldin campaign. I think it's something like $300,000 for the last week, which is an incredible amount of money when you think about it. And yes, you are right. We've seen so many parallels. One thing in particular, I don't know if you've noticed this, but Lee Zeldin has never condemned what happened in Charlottesville. I've checked out his entire Twitter history, and just like Donald Trump, basically trying to say there are good people on both sides, and that, you know, it's the dialogue that has to change, but never actually coming out and saying that white supremacy is a bad thing. And when you have a president who basically has gone on record as saying, yes, I'm a nationalist and I'm proud of it, that's pretty disturbing.
Yeah, and although at the same time, I've been also following his Twitter account, he has not mentioned Donald Trump. He's a very careful politician. He's been all in for Donald Trump until about the last 4 weeks. And also the Brett Kavanaugh hearing, no word from our congressman about where he stood on that, except for I'm sure he would have supported him. But to your point about not having town halls, we want to know what our politicians feel about issues and events. And he is somebody that has stayed close to the president when it's been advantageous for him, but also I think a little bit cowardly in his approach to not speaking out on some of these other really important issues.
Well, it's going to be an interesting next 7 days, because what I think we're going to see, I think we're going to see redoubling of efforts. There have been a lot of major events that happened over the past couple of weeks. New York Times and Newsday have both endorsed Perry Gershon. So I think, you know, that is going to close up any gap that existed beforehand significantly. And I think, you know, you might be seeing a Hail Mary from Lee Zeldin, and he might be embracing Trump a lot more than he has been.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yes, indeed. Thanks for your call.
Right. Thank you.
All right, take care. And that's how you you basically get. Oh, I see Finn's plane has landed. Okay, so we are done for tonight as far as phone calls. We'd love to take more phone calls, but we'll have to do that next week on Election Day and in weeks following. Again, this is a fundraising program, and while we don't have people in the tally room, we do have a website that works. Go to WUSB.FM, and please show your support for this kind of conversation, dialogue, accessibility, democracy, all of that. And you can write to us at Off the Wall, OTW, at 2600.com. We will see you next week. Good night.